The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Happy Wednesday, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your host, and no, it is not Vina, it is Tiffany Ray. Today we have an exciting interview. It's X Factor Investing, Middle Class to Financially Free by 43. Remember, we are live today. You can call us at 877-772-9658, and we're taking emails as well at vinaradio@gmail.com. So let me get right to this bio. Both Will and Veronica Pritchard started investing in real estate 13 years ago with a net worth of close to $0. They got married and decided to keep Will's bachelor pad to rent out to the for their college savings for their son. Veronica then was a high school administrator and Will was a firefighter. They soon were hooked on rentals and decided to shoot for 10 rentals over the next 20 years to supplement their retirement income. Ultimately, they bypassed that goal and achieved financial freedom at 43, and they both retired. Boy, I can't wait to hear about this story. Currently, they still enjoy growing their portfolio, but they love the freedom and working on their own terms. Their focus is rental property investing, but they also enjoy being a private lender to investors in their network. Currently, they live in San Antonio, Texas, and they love to travel, and they take their kids, both 12 and 17 years old, on at least one international trip per year. They love the outdoor adventures, experiencing other cultures, and they have a passion for sharing what they've learned and helping other middle-class families to achieve financial freedom as well. They believe that real estate is one of the few places where the American dream is still alive and it's all well, where normal people can overcome inflation, taxes, and move ahead financially without taking major risk and without a lot of money. So give us a warm welcome and join right into the conversation today, both Will and Veronica. Are you there?
Yes, can you hear us, Tiffany?
Yes, I hear you. Is Veronica there as well?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Tiffany. Hey there. I hear you guys loud and clear. So thank you for joining us today. I'm excited to hear about this journey, middle class to financially free by 43. Wow, what a major feat. I think we should just jump right in. So you guys, as I understand it and reading a lot about you, you worked pretty typical middle class jobs, it says, and then you decided that you were going to retire 20 years earlier than most people do. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't think we saw the beginning. We sold sort of 10 houses in the next 20 years or so to retire, and supplement retirement is kind of what we saw. And we thought that first rental could help pay for our kids' college maybe. And then we just go maybe every few years and buy a rental. But as we learn more through our local RIA and reading and podcasts, and just took a bunch of base hits and started to build a little portfolio, and then gradually saw this could be a business that replaces our active income. And so Veronica quit her job first probably about 6 years ago, and then I followed about 2 years ago, and no looking back.
Yeah, you know, that must have been scary. I know we are conditioned to that W-2, and we definitely have to change our thoughts and our mindsets about, you know, what financially free looks like for each individual. So I'm pretty sure you guys sacrificed a lot of things during that time when you were building your real estate portfolio. So can you share with the audience and myself what your life was like during that 13-year stint?
Yeah,
I think you used the right word, scary. That it was one of the scariest things I think I have ever done, that we have ever done. When we decided that I would leave my job 6 years ago, we only had maybe 7 rentals at the time. So it went in no way, supplement or replace rather my income. But at the time, I was working as a high school administrator and we had 2 young kids at home. So it was kind of crazy with the amount of hours that I was working. And then it got to the point where we thought, well, we're going to have to hire a property manager because this is taking up a lot of time. So, and we really wanted to grow the rental portfolio because we saw what it was doing. And so it was something we wanted to grow. And so we made the decision together that I would, manage the portfolio and help, dedicate more time to growing and have the flexibility with the kids. So I think that helped it be a little less scary, the fact that I had a big enough reason, a big enough why. I wanted that flexibility. I wanted that time so badly, to have that flexibility with the kids. So, but you're right. It was super scary to let go of that. It's a career that I worked very hard for, and I liked my job. Other than the time it took, the hours I was working, I liked what I was doing and I had a plan, I was going to be principal by X number of years. And, so it was a big shift. But I'm so glad we took that leap. And then, we were able to focus more time on this. And then once we tasted freedom, it was hard. It was hard to go back.
I certainly can imagine. I did hear you say something about your why. I think that that's a very important motivating factor in anything that it is that we do. And I know that sometimes we set off on a path of financial independence and we don't necessarily garner the support of our family or our friends or our bosses, colleagues, those types of things. So did you have any pushback from any of those folks? How did you deal with that?
We did, because I was working, the job that I had was a pretty sought after position in a reputable school district here in San Antonio. So people thought I was crazy walking away from that. So yes, I did get that a lot. And then the security, right? I had job security, but health benefits, was walking away from a lot when we decided that. And then Will too, he had promoted to battalion chief. So when he announced that he was going to retire early from the fire department, people thought he was crazy. So we definitely got, a lot of people telling us that, we were making a big mistake or, but I think we also had a lot of support and we were good about building a community that is supportive and help is growth minded. And I think that's really important, who we spend time with. And so I think we also had a lot of support, within our community.
I did hear you say something about your local RIA and folks that were rallying around you to help you make that.
Yes.
But it sounds like to me that Will was pretty spirited anyway. Firefighter, I don't know. I don't think I could run into a blaze like that.
Right?
Yeah, that is scary. So we're going to take a break and don't leave us, audience. We'll be right back and continue this conversation with Will and Veronica. Stay with us. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I'm your host today, Tiffany. I would like to invite you to please call us if you have any questions that you want to share with both Will and Veronica. Our number here is 1-877-772-9658. And we are open for emails as well. That's Vena, V-E-N-A, radio at gmail.com. So, Will and Veronica, what is it other than you found your rental and you had your bachelor pad about this real estate in particular that attracted you? Why not something else?
Well, that's a great question. I'd heard too many people that would talk about, remember that house we had 20 years ago? Look at what it would be worth today if we still had it. And we had had some family members who had had property that had appreciated, but we knew we couldn't really afford to buy huge swaths of land and just hold it and hope for appreciation. We needed something that would cash flow. So as we began to research more and more, rental properties just seemed to be the thing. Being able to use leverage, use debt to control more real estate than we could with just cash alone. So those are some of the reasons. We liked how tangible it was. It's a necessity. It's not really luxury item. It's something people need, and we like that. We could really understand it. And as we've learned, you know, more and more, we've realized there's just so many layers to it to make it such a good asset class. So we're almost exclusively invested in either real estate or real estate debt, lending to other investors. We have very small exposure to the stock market.
Yeah, I heard you say serving the needs of others. There's definitely a social component to this real estate thing. And then you talked about your why. So it seems like you have some strong drivers there to help you push you towards this financially free by 43. You talked about leverage and you talked about properties and lending. And I want to table the lending for a second, but let's go to the kinds of properties that you focus on. Is it single family, multi, ABC class? What areas?
It's mainly single family and small multifamily here in San Antonio. I would say they're B to C class rental property. Kind of working class is our bread and butter. We like to provide really good quality rentals for whatever area they're in. And I think we've got up to like a fourplex and quite a few single families. But as far as class-wise, that'd be like B to C class. And in our market, that like after-repaired value, we're talking about maybe 175 to 250 is kind of our bread and butter
in the single-family
space at this point in the market.
Yeah, so tell us a little more about why you think that you decided to only stick with the multifamily piece or the single-family. I guess when you say multifamily, you don't mean commercial. You said 1 to 4 family,
right.
Like why did you just end up there? Was it your being able, Veronica, to have your arms around it when you decided to depart from your work first and invest? Or was there some other driving factor in the San Antonio area that made you guys lean more towards that, or just your high liking of it?
That's a great question. So I think our favorite, we can both agree that single family is our favorite as far as management goes. We get families in there and they stay a long time and just, you know, they're just so nice. They're a lot more passive than we have some duplexes, we have a triplex and fourplexes, and those definitely are a little bit more time intensive or a little bit more management, I guess, is required for that. But the cash flow is definitely way better. And in Texas, we have high property taxes. So the more doors we can add to one property, the better our cash flow is going to be. So I think we switched over to the small multis, which I shouldn't say switch because we still are buying single family. It just depends on the numbers at the end of the day. But the small multis, I think we considered those because we just saw the cash flow. And then once we started building that, building our portfolio, and we saw that it was possible to exit if we're willing to exit, we knew we needed to put a little bit more focus on the cash flow. So I think that's what helped us open up to that. But definitely single family is what we really enjoy.
Yeah, so I just wonder, with both of you deciding to quit your jobs, which congratulations, by the way, very, very great feat, especially by 43. You are more than welcome. It takes a lot of nerve. I just wonder, working together in the business, and this is a personal question of mine, not even necessarily what I think the audience would necessarily ask if they called in, but do you guys ever like overlap in each other in your regular day to day? So what's the day in the life like for Will and Veronica? What does that look like?
See, that is such a great question. I think I'll let Will answer that.
Oh, Will, you're on the spot. You're up.
We have very different strengths, which is actually an advantage. Veronica's very systems based. She can create a system out of chaos and make order occur. And I'm better at making chaos occur. So I like to find deals and find funding and that kind of thing. And then she makes it come together. And we do best when we stay in our own lanes. Just recently, there was an occasion, she does our project management, and she has a system for it. And I thought I was going to help out. And, man, it was like putting a stick in your bicycle spoke, you know. it threw everything off, and we should just stay in the lanes that we're good at. So having such different strengths and different personalities, I think, has actually been one of our biggest strengths as a couple. And then we both like real estate and we like working together. So we now, and we are constantly reminded to stay in our own respective lanes.
Yeah, I think that's a very wise strategy, especially when you work together and then you have to come home and still be together. So good for you, Will, for recognizing that the person with the system should do the system. So I totally understand how that works. But I did hear you say something that made me think of another question. You talked about raising capital and money. So you must at some time during the course of your stint maybe ran out of money and credit like early in the process. So how do you get your funding to buy all your properties?
That's another good question, Tiffany. And since that is my lane, I'll answer that. But we kind of leaned on what we had. So at first we had two W-2s. So we kind of did the conventional save up a down payment, get a bank loan because we had good credit and we had incomes that would support it. But that got harder as we filled out those 10 conventional loans, mm-hmm. and then we had one W-2, and then we had zero W-2s. So where I've seen some people start with really creative strategies, we actually started with boring strategies, but realized that saving up down payments was taking us literally years, maybe 2 years, to save up a down payment. And that's working overtime, scrimping. So we had to get creative. And private money was our biggest game changer. We heard about private money, but we talked about this business with enthusiasm all the time. The friends at church inquired about our business and said, man, it sounds like they're having fun. We'd love to invest in something like this. They had higher incomes, but they didn't have a lot of time. And so we left church and were like, I think that's like our private lender. You know, let's learn more about that. And so teaching people how to raise their own private money has been a side project of ours, just in conversation or in RIA groups or whatever groups we're invited to. We just talk about, hey, here's ways you can build relationships that could become your source of funding. And when we started, DSCR lenders weren't really around, those debt service coverage ratio lenders. That's come about later and serves a really good part of the market, but that didn't exist early on. So we had to get creative. And so raising private money, learning how to raise it, and develop new private lenders has been key. So we ran out of our conventional loans several years ago, and since then we've used a combination of private money, seller financing, some DSCR loans, some commercial loans. So a real mix along the way.
Sounds like a good strategy. Yeah, I know a lot of people, you're hearing the buzzword DSCR loan, but I've still hear a lot of folk talk about other people's money, private money, and definitely that creative strategy. So good for you. And thank you for sharing some of those tidbits with us in the audience today. I think I have time for one more question. So this is the hard one, and I'm going to pose it to both of you. If you were starting again today, right now, would you choose the same path or would you choose to do something differently?
I would totally start where we did with single family rentals. I feel like they're small enough to not be too scary. A lot of people have owned or at least lived in a single family house. So I feel like you can make mistakes and still recover. I think single family is a great place to start. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, right? Right now you think, oh, I should have started with more. I should have been more aggressive. But we didn't know that. We were still sort of in the shadows of 2008 when we began. And a lot of people were saying, oh, don't buy real estate. The real estate market is going to crash again. And we heard tons of naysayers. So it's easy in retrospect to say, I should have started more aggressively. But at the time, buying one little rent house was pretty scary. And we scraped together everything we had to buy it. So I would definitely start with single family again. I think just a bread and butter working class rental is the best teacher. I was the guy that read all the books and Veronica said, hey, I don't want to hear about real estate anymore until we do something. And she gave me that nudge. So taking action has been the best teacher along with all the other education, but to get that experience. So yes, I would start with single family again. What about you?
Yeah.
So Veronica, we're going to table you until we come back from a break from the station.
Okay.
Guys, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I am your host, Tiffany Ray. Remember, you can call us at 877-772-9658. Today, we're talking about the X Factor, middle class, financially free by 43. And we're speaking with Will and Veronica about their rental property investing. So if you have any questions, call us, and you can also send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. And if you'd like to learn more about rentals, I will invite you this Saturday to our upcoming intensive. It's called The Fundamentals of Real Estate. It is an online class. So the membership, it's $47 for members and $97 for non-members. And you can get more information at Cincinnati REIA. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. So Veronica, are you still with me? Veronica, are you there? That's okay. Something happened. I think we lost them. So let me tell you a little bit about what's happening on Friday. So feel free to look at our calendar at CincinnatiREIA.com. We have a wonderful haves and wants forum that starts at 8:55. We have a prop swap that immediately follows after that. And you will also see on our calendar that there are over 20 groups per month. And a very active community that will help support you along the way in your real estate journey. Again, you can get more information about that at CincinnatiREIA.com. And I think we have them back on the line. Maybe not. Not yet. So let's talk about something else. If you are just joining us, we are with Will and Veronica Pritchard, and they're talking about their rental property investing. And what they did was what we call in the environment X factor investing. And they're telling us and sharing their tips and strategies on middle class to financially free by 43. And if you missed some of the small talk, we were talking about them investing in single family houses and multifamilies, so that one to four family, where they like to have an intimate relationship with the people that they actually rent to that are longtime renters. And they also like to leverage by buying more properties and then teaching folk how to strategize to get private money lenders. And we summed that up by talking about a couple of DSCR loans and talked about saving up for a down payment and how difficult it was. So I invite you to look at the website to learn more information on fundamentals of rentals. And if you are a member, this evening we will have our rental class, and you'll be able to ask any questions. That happens this evening at 7:30. And again, you can get more information at REIA, CincinnatiREIA, REIA.com. So I'm going to pause for a second and see if we have our folk back. We've got an answering machine. This is interesting. I feel like I need to sing a song for you guys or something. I bet you didn't know that I could sing. We won't do that. So we're going to give it just 1 second, and then we will take a question, because I have a question in my email. So, hey, Christian Peoples, I know that name. It says, my question is how to get started with one person's income on a single family rental home. So since Will and Veronica are not back with us, I am actually going to answer that question for you based on my experience. So what I would say first is it's not a matter of education, because I know this person that actually sent the actual email, but it's surrounding yourself with a community of people who could support you. And then deciding whether or not you're interested in that down payment that, Will and Veronica were talking about and saving, or if you want to, seek more information about, private money. So I think my guests are back. I'm going to pose this question to them to see how they would answer it different. But first, Veronica, are you back with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. Glad to have you back. So I think we've got a question, but first you were going to answer the question about what you would possibly do differently if you had to start all over again.
Oh, absolutely. I think at the beginning we had no idea how powerful this was, but I'm so glad that we remain focused and our life is, there's no way we would be where we're at today if it weren't for real estate. So absolutely, I would do it over exactly the way, well, I say that right now, I wish we would have been more aggressive and bought more real estate, but it's easier said. We have the experience early on was a little scary, but.
Absolutely.
Yes, to answer your question, we would do it all over again.
I agree with you on that. Hindsight is definitely 20/20, and we always say woulda, shoulda, coulda, or, you know, if I had to do all over again, I would do X. But I think we are oftentimes exactly where we're intended to be, and it happens the way that it's supposed to unfold. So I'm not surprised at all at your answer that you would do it pretty much the same way. So are you guys ready for a question out there? I posed it once before, but I'd like to ask it again of you. So this question comes from Kristen Peoples here in Cincinnati, and her question is how to get started with a one person income on a single family rental home.
Good question. One thing that if you know, there's a lot of things that I've learned over the years and we did not do, but like house hacking, if you could afford to move into a house and rent out either other rooms, other units, it kind of depends on if you're single, you have children, what you're willing to do. We had a friend here recently that moved out of a really great single family house to move into a fourplex. So he went from having just one house to having 5 units overnight. And I think that's a really great strategy in this market where you can get maybe a low down payment to move into something. That's just one idea that comes to me off the top of my head. How about you?
Yeah, just learning creative strategies. You know, it just depends on what their situation is, if they're willing to put in the work, right? And maybe get some seller financing. Like I know landlords that have been doing this for a long time often are the best ones to, they like the seller financing. They like spreading out that capital gain. Just learning creative strategies. Of course, buying a house at a discount and doing that sweat equity where they're going to rehab it. Raising that private money. Also, I mean, you don't have to go with the bank right now. We just don't use banks. Now we use all debt partners. So being open to partnership, maybe it's a lender, private lender, or maybe it's an equity partner. You know, somebody has been doing this for a while. We have people that, you know, are new to real estate, and it takes a while, right, to build momentum and to build credibility. The more transactions you have, the more credible you are. And so it's easier. It's easier to get deals. It's easier to get money the longer you do it. But at the beginning, it seems like it takes forever to gain that momentum. So we have new investors that come to us and have offered us equity positions on real estate as well. So, I mean, it's just learning different creative strategies. Bank lending is not the only, I wish I would have known that early on, you know. So we bought several houses where, you know, it was a landlord that just wanted out of the business. And so, but they were used to that cash flow. So they seller financed it we had a couple of seller finance at 0%. You know, it just depends on what the seller wants and needs, what their situation is. So I would say really immerse themselves in creative strategies. If they're willing to move, that's a great strategy, right? If you just put 5% down a conventional loan and live there. But I know for us, we made that decision. We have little ones, so we didn't want to have to move all the time. Some people do. You know, we just didn't. So it just depends on the individual.
If you're younger, I like the house hacking thing. I think when everybody buys their first home, it should be a 2-family or 4-family, and then they can get the hang of it and move on for there. That's just especially if you're younger. I understand if you're already established and have children and what have you. But one strategy that we didn't mention that I think people should not lose sight of is the BRRRR strategy, because it definitely works. And especially if you are working and you have that W-2 income to support, then that strategy works really well. But you touched on something that's close, near, and dear to my heart, and that is the house hacking or I would call it shared housing, and we won't go down that road, but renting that extra room out, or if you have a large enough house, is a really good way to build up the down payment that you might need to be able to move into that other piece of property that you're looking for. If you're you haven't built up the credibility, like you said, Veronica, to do the private lending yet. So those are some really good answers. Yeah. Hope we answered that for you, Kristen. If you have any more questions, then shoot us back another email. So the question I always like to ask everybody after the would you do it differently is, what do you guys think you did right in your, along the way in your process? And then what did you do wrong that you would tell others not to do?
I think we had a clear why that was what we did right. That drove us, and we were frugal on things that didn't matter too much. The cars we drove didn't matter that much, but travel did. So we continued to travel throughout because we wanted to have these experiences with our kids. So where I'm a big fan of frugality, there's a time where Veronica would say, hey, this is the time where we spend some of this money. We don't get this time back. So it's really finding out why you're doing it. I was so frugal. We finally saved up enough to go to Hawaii, and then they had a helicopter trip around this active volcano, and I was so cheap, I didn't want to take it. And she said, we're spending the money. We're here. We're not going to be here for a long time, you know, maybe never. And I'm so glad she nudged me, even though we were saving every penny for investing. That was something I wouldn't trade. So that's something that we did right, like having the vision and the big enough why. And I would say people need to figure out how bad they want it. We put all of our eggs in one basket. We stopped contributing to retirement accounts. We put that all towards real estate. We were that committed. But also, you know, what we did wrong, there were times maybe where we were too frugal or where we might have missed an opportunity due to that. But that's kind of my answer. I don't know what Veronica would say
to
that.
So, Veronica, yeah. I'm going to pause you for just a second because guess what? We have an active person caller on the line. It's Elsie from Cincinnati. Are you ready to take a call?
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Hey, Elsie.
Hello. How are you?
Wonderful. Hi. What's your question today for us?
So, in listening to the podcast, all so many great nuggets are dropped right now. So, thank you for sharing. But I guess my question is really surrounding is, once you get in the door, once you get the one and the two, and then you kind of use up like your bank, I can go to the bank and get a loan. If you had to give a tip, what would be the next tip you would give for a person, potentially like me, where I have maybe one or two rentals, but now I need to go forward and I kind of feel stuck where I'm at?
Yeah. I would personally say talk to lenders along the way and have them look at your financial picture and tell you how lendable you are. We had some conventional lenders that said we could only get 10 loans, and then after we used them all with both of our names, we found a conventional lender that said we could do 10 in each of our names, and we missed that opportunity. Keep clean books so that you can show the income you're earning from your real estate, and ask them, are you going to add back the depreciation? Is that going to count against me? Sometimes we take too many write-offs and we make ourselves unlendable. And, you know, it's a benefit of real estate that we can show a low income, but it's also a risk that you might show too low of an income. So first I would say develop some relationships with lenders and have them look at your financials and say, well, how do you see this? From a lender's perspective, how lendable do I look? What could I do to improve how I look in your eyes? And then I would develop personal relationships, look at maybe seller financing, developing some leads with maybe, like Veronica mentioned, hired landlords. And then finally, DSCR loans. Those are loans that are based more on the income of the property than they are on the individual's income and credit score. So the DSCR loans are a little pricey, but they're a good tool for certain situations. So I would learn a lot about those, how they work.
I would look at the equity that you have on the real estate. I think it's really important to look at that because that's your money to use. So, you know, one thing we did is with a commercial lender, we used other real estate as a down payment. So we combined our real estate with new acquisitions. So the equity served as a down payment on our new real estate. So it's just a combined loan. Also, maybe getting a second lien position on your equity. You know, you might have a lender that's willing to do that to be able to access that equity. Or if you have a lot of equity, maybe leverage one property and then one get one, like leverage one a lot, then have the other one free and clear. Now that one you can go to a bank and get a line of credit on. A line of credit can be very powerful as well, too, if used properly, if it's a cash-flowing piece of real estate. But just talking to a lot of lenders, like Will said, you know, and there's a lot of them that don't quite understand it, you know, don't really. So it's not going to maybe the smaller banks, you know, so it's talking to a lot of them. Don't take no for an answer. Just keep talking to a lot of different lenders, but really cultivating those private lenders. If you have a good deal, I always tell people, like, if you have a good deal, you're going to find a lender. If you go to your local RIA, there's going to be a private lender there if it's a good enough deal that'll loan on it, want to partner with you as a debt partner. So I think it's focusing on getting that really good deal where it puts your lender in a very safe position.
Did that answer your question, Elsie?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much. Like I said, great nuggets. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Really appreciate it, guys. So you made a couple of great points there, Veronica. You were talking about leveraging the equity, and basically that is a good debt. I mean, we talk a lot in our environment about, you know, debt free, but actually leveraging and the way that you're describing it is one of the easiest ways to build your portfolio very quickly. You know, it has to be the right piece of property, the right asset, in order for you to leverage your debt against. But once you do that, and when you are buying, for example, those distressed properties like Will that you mentioned earlier, and putting a little sweat equity into those, then you can exponentially raise your equity in the new property so that you're able to go out and repeat, which is what we were talking about with those DSCR loans and the BRRRR strategy. So very, very sage advice. I appreciate that. And we're going to take a break right now and stay with us, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you for staying tuned in to Real Live Real Estate Investing. I am your host, Tiffany Ray, and I'm talking today with Will and Veronica Pritchard. I believe that we were talking with you, Veronica, about that. What did you do right? What did you do wrong? And you were going to give us some information about what you would tell others not to do.
Sure. I think one thing that we all said, I don't think we knew it at the time, but we really focused on relationships, and that was from relationships with our tenants, with our contractors, with our lenders. You know, so I think that has really paid off in the long run, where we have, you know, really great tenants and good, reliable contractors. And then our lenders have been with us for years now. So I think that is something that is, it seems really obvious, you know, but at the time, like, even if a deal's going a little sideways, it's important to keep that integrity and follow through with whatever it is that we said we were going to do. You know, and then Will's grandmother's Nana, she's my biggest mentor, and she says, you know, if you end up losing a little money, it's tuition. You know, you paid for college tuition, just consider tuition and learn and move on. And so we always say, okay, that was tuition. Now we know what to do the next time.
Nothing like skinning your knees with a little, with losing a little money. That's a lesson well learned, and surely you won't repeat that one again. So I like that from her, from his grandma.
Yes.
I like that a lot.
Yes. So I think, you know, something that I would do different, you know, on the wrong, if I'm going to focus on the wrong side, I think we didn't have, it was realizing how important systems are from the very beginning, even before you need it, or, hiring the right people. A lot of times we were trying to be so frugal that, you know, we didn't hire the right people at the very beginning. And so you get what you pay for. And so I think it's important to hire the expert. There's so many different aspects, you know, in one deal. There's a lot of different wheels, you know, that we return. And so there's professionals that are experts in each one, whether it's the title company or your attorney for the note or whatever, right? And sometimes we think, oh, I'll save $200-$300 if I do it myself. Well, then it ends up being way more than that. So I think trusting, getting the good people on board, getting the right team together is really important, and realizing that you're not really saving those $200-$500 in the long run. So being willing to hire the right people from the beginning, even before you think you need them, to help grow, to be able to scale. Otherwise, it's no fun, and it gets really stressful. You know, so for us to want to continue to grow and buy more real estate, we need to be able to be open in that and invest in the right people.
Totally agree. So we have a caller on the line, and we have another question. So we're going to take Kathleen first. Kathleen from Texas, are you there?
Hi, I'm here. How are you all?
Hey there.
I wonder if you're good. I wanted to know how much of a reserve should the beginning investor in rental properties keep for repairs if most, if not all, of their payment, their income from rent is going to make payments?
That's a good question. I think you could get a lot of different answers on this. And we probably haven't kept enough reserves at times over the years. If the reserves build up too much, we feel like we need to get that money working, particularly when interest rates were so low and they were earning nothing in savings, but inflation was eroding them. So I don't have a good solid number for you. I can say when we bought our second rental, it was every penny we had. And we pray that nothing broke, because we didn't know how we would fix the water heater, how we would come up with the repair money. So we're kind of guilty of stretching ourselves thin and then growing into it. But it does lead to some stressful nights on occasion.
Yeah.
That's kind of my answer, but I don't know. Do you have a specific number in mind, Veronica?
I heard someone say at the beginning, you know, that their line of credit was their reserve, because it is really hard at the beginning to gain that momentum. And I will say the deals get better. The more transactions, the more acquisitions, the deals just seem to be getting better and better. Because, you know, people just know that we're buyers and they bring us deals. But at the beginning, we were paying, 13% on a private loan. Now we wouldn't pay that anymore, right? So money's gone cheaper for us, but that came with experience. So, at the beginning, I can't say we had the reserves, but that's also how risk tolerant you are, right? We also had some retirement accounts that we could liquidate, so that was kind of our reserve.
Yeah,
our credit was our reserve. Now though, whenever we underwrite a deal, we do count 15% of the gross cash flow. I'm sorry, gross rent. We do set aside 15% for our reserve account, because we know eventually it's roof and it's going to need, you know. So now we do. Now we don't buy. We buy real estate with, you know, with underwriting at least 15%, depending on the real estate. But on average, it's 15%. Now we're rehabbing this property, so when we rehab them, everything's new. So that keeps capital expenditures down for the first few years. It's going to need a new roof. Go ahead and do it. You know, new water heater, all those big ticket items. We do it from the beginning and just take that hit up front. And so that helps us have a little bit better predictable cash flow, you know, for the next 2 years. So that's how we mitigate that now. But yes, at the beginning, it was just a lot of praying that things would go well.
What is the old adage? Prayer helps. Go ahead, Kathleen. What was that?
Do you purchase home warranties for your rentals?
We don't. We don't purchase warranties for anything, maybe on our cell phones, but not on any appliance. We feel like you either buy all the warranties or none of them. And so we don't have anything against home warranties. We've just decided, as we've developed good relationships with contractors, that we'll hire good contractors to make the repairs we need. I don't have a strong opinion on it. It's just something we've opted not to do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Appreciate the call, Kathleen. Hope to hear from you again soon.
Thank you,
so I've got a quick question for you guys, and then we're going to wrap it up here in a few minutes. So it looks like you sparked a lot of questions around this private lending. So this text is from Christine Latney, and she asks, can you give more detail on wordings you would use for private money? Like what types of friends or families do you, what type, is it friends or families that you have the most success with, or any other quick advice about this? And we need to do this in about 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll try to make it quick.
All right.
Anybody can be a private lender. Don't think you know who has money. I have firefighters who are in pretty blue-collar trade who have hundreds of thousands of dollars they've invested with us, and I would have never known. We always joke at our RIA that sometimes the people that look the most dingy are the people with the most money, and the people that look like they have the money don't. So don't prejudge anyone. I say share your story enthusiastically. Tell about what you're doing you know, that you love what you're doing, and people will come to you ultimately. And then you can learn how to paper it and do all that with the help of someone at the RIA or someone in your community. So it could be a friend, it could be a family member, it could be a coworker. I just say tell your story and use social media to tell it. It's like free advertising. Talk about what you're learning. Remind people that you're out here in the industry. You're building credibility with each of those moves. And then you want to build your reputation, and then you want to present a really good deal with really good numbers. The lower the loan to value, the safer to the investor. So think of it from the lender's perspective.
And that
just making it safer. Like at the very beginning, we put part of our cash in to make it really safe for the lender. You know, and then later on, they were lending us all the way up to the rehab budget, zero money out of our pocket. But it just takes a while to build that credibility. So. But getting that good deal and making it safe for the lender, and then you'll just from there it just builds.
And that stays advice. And with that, we're going to end our show. Thank you, Will and Veronica, for being with me today. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm Tiffany Ray, and I hope to see you back next week.